Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
We're back another week in the can, sort of. I thought for a second we might not do this because we were meant to do it on a Friday and Ian and I both forgot that we said we'd start recording on a Friday. But it is Sunday at the time of recording and we are doing it. So I still feel we've held up our end of the bargain, that the show is back.
Echoing loud in my ears was the sound of you in a written message saying, I don't mind when we bring it back, but when we bring it back, we're bringing it back and it's staying for a good run.
Yeah.
So I would have felt bad if we hadn't done this week. Sunday's all good.
I do remember sending a message that conveyed those emotions, yes. Very good. Very good. Well, we're going to get into some news. Later on, we're going to talk about something that I did not know existed at all. It's to do with Apple TVs. It's quite specific to the UK, and it was genuinely, genuinely surprising. We're also going to talk about SSDs and HDDs in the Patreon version.
When we're into that chat, you'll learn some things that you definitely probably didn't know, probably.
And I haven't read Ian's script for it yet, so this will be brand new information at the point of delivery. But speaking of information and points and delivery, let's talk about something the London mayor and the Met boss have been talking about this week. Mobile phone companies, specifically, they've been told they need to do more to make devices harder to steal. Now, this comes after the number of thefts even. We haven't been doing this for a few months, sorry.
After the number of thefts
have increased. This is according to the BBC this week, which also said that Apple, Samsung, Google, Motorola, Nokia, and the phone networks had all got together with some cake and some jelly and the ice cream. That's embellishment. BBC didn't say that. But they did say they'd met with London's mayor and the Met Police Commissioner at City Hall, and were told, you have a role in, quote, designing out the ability for stolen phones to be reused. I find this to be a story that could have been written 10 years ago, maybe even 20 years ago. But here are some numbers. Apparently, just under 60,000 phones were stolen in London alone over a 12-month period between September of last year and August of this year. That is a 28% increase year on year. Over 5 years, there's been a 73% rise in mobile phone thefts in the capital. These are numbers that came from the Met Office. So these are the number of thefts reported. It may very well be that there were a greater number than were reported. But these are the...
Oh, I imagine so. The only reason to report a phone theft is to get a crime number. And the only reason to get a crime number is to make an insurance claim. And I bet a lot of people aren't insured.
Yeah. Plus, to make a claim, you have to phone them. And if someone's stolen your phone, that makes things sort of ironically difficult. But there we go. So they've discussed some measures. And bear in mind, this isn't just a couple of people talking about this in a bar. This is people from Apple, Samsung, Google. This is the Met Police. This is, you know, in City Hall, talking about what can we do to make phones less attractive to be stolen. Some of the measures that they discussed, to me, seem nuts. And I'm quoting, these are some of the things that apparently...
Are they going to graft it onto your hand bone?
You might as well. They'd be easier than some of these things. Because one of the suggestions is make it harder for phones to be broken up and used for parts. Now that, on one hand, might...
I mean, is that a huge problem?
Have you tried repairing a phone not personally.
Well.
But they are infamously difficult to take apart.
I took a phone apart once, and we're not talking about a premium phone. We're talking about a relatively cheap Huawei. And when I took it apart, it became very apparent very quickly that it was never going to go back together again.
Which in a sense, I suppose, is what they're saying here, that if it's harder to break them up and sell for parts, that's one thing. But reality is, if you made it hard to break up a phone, you're also making it hard to repair or or recycle, which is in itself difficult and is in itself something that regulators and governments are trying hard to make easier. So making it harder to be broken up in the first place has a knock-on effect that it would presumably be even more difficult to repair it. So, bizarre. Another one, improve location tracing. Now, aside from all the obvious things about what that would mean for privacy, I actually think that Apple and Google in particular do a fantastic job at making it possible to track your phones, even if they're out of battery, even if they've been logged out of your account, even if they are not in 4G service. You know, if you lose an iPhone, for instance, and the battery dies and there's no Wi-Fi and there's no 4G, they can still be pinged via low energy Bluetooth or equivalents and can still be traced. If someone signs you out, when those devices reconnect to the internet somehow, public hotspot 4G via something else, they can still receive a kill switch that essentially says this phone is reported as stolen and it's unusable. You know,
yes.
And you can see where they are on a map. And they've done this for years. Google has very similar things as well. They're both very, very good at this. I don't honestly know how you could make that better.
Yeah, I mean, it would be very, very difficult, like you say, you know, without making it so that removing the case destroys the internal components, which I'm sure is technically possible. It would be, you know, absolutely impossible to prevent this. And I mean, I think most of the devices that get stolen are stolen for reuse, right? So they're not really being parted out, because if you want to replace a component on a phone, it's probably quite easy and cheap to get those components from China anyway. And okay, they may not be first party Apple approved things. Like, you'd have that problem with screens quite often, where you can get a screen that fits in an iPhone, but it won't be an actual iPhone screen, so it won't be quite as good. It'll probably be fine. And then you've got all the bits that they won't sell, which is like the fingerprint scanner and all that kind of jazz, which are tied to the secure enclave. But, you know, really, I don't. There isn't anything you can do to stop it apart from encouraging them to do what they already do, which is make phones unusable afterwards.
You're disincentivizing theft in the third place. I mean, what are they going to do? Say, well, please make these phones less desirable. You know, you could argue that there's some benefit in doing that, because it would force people to think twice about whether they want to upgrade or something. But that's not what this is trying to combat. This is trying to say, if you make your phone less desirable, people won't steal them. I don't even think that would necessarily be a solution, because I've seen somebody have their phone taken out of their hand as they walked along a street because someone on a scooter, as in a petrol-powered scooter, that is a Vespa type thing, drove past and tried to snatch it out of somebody's hand. It was on Bond Street a few years ago. And they definitely weren't looking to see if it was, you know, the latest iPhone or two generations.
No, they were just stealing
Samsung.
Whatever you had, right?
Yeah. But so,
have you ever had that thing where you sit outside for a meal or a pint or something and someone comes up to you with a bit of paper and covers your phone on the table and tries to show you something on the paper? So they're distracting you while they pinch your phone from underneath.
No,
it's a big problem.
I haven't, but that's part of what they're talking about here. In fact, there were some solutions that were posted, and I think a lot of these pieces of advice are perfectly good, not even just for mobile phones, but this is source: City Hall and Met Police, how to prevent your mobile phone from being stolen. Thieves often target people who are distracted, so keeping valuables hidden ensures you are more alert. Really? Shocking.
Yes, sure.
Be aware of your surroundings when you're out and about. Generally pretty good advice anyway.
Yeah.
Try not to walk along with your phone or valuables on show. You know, plan your route and use forms of transport that others are using. I mean, there's lots of advice like this that you can't pick it apart for saying, well, it's not decent advice, but it's, I don't honestly think
But is it decent advice really? Because what you're ultimately doing is saying that crime isn't going to go away, and that the only way to avoid it is to basically get lucky and only have to go to safe places by a safe transport. Whereas the reality is, you know, in London particularly, I'm sure we've all done this, you know, you might be walking from point A to point B thinking you know where you're going, end up down a different street and not have any idea where you are in reality. And then, you know, I mean, you can't, there's the answer to this is nothing to do with phones being stolen. It's about making sure that, you know, people don't need to resort to crime in the first place. And Captain Kremen raises the excellent point in chat that what about if the police actually went to houses and got devices back when it was obvious they were there? Because you don't have to look very hard on YouTube to see videos of people who've had laptops stolen and say, oh, it's in this house over here. Police, will you come and help me get it back? And they'll be like, no, absolutely not.
But they don't forget, it's very time consuming to send inappropriate messages.
Well, do they want
to
put
other?
A stop to crime? I was gonna say, I thought you were gonna be serious there and say it's very time consuming to do that. Well, yeah, sure it is. But yeah, I mean, but do we want to put a stop to crime or not?
Oh, because I'd love to.
Ultimately,
wouldn't that be great? A world without crime. And that would be great. I'm all for it, mate. I'm all for it. I don't think it'll happen. A couple of questions I have about this, though. I know that
it's
understandable that the number of mobile phone thefts will be on the rise, but the number of mobile phones being used has also been growing. Not necessarily. I don't know if it would visually look different between 5 years ago and 10 years ago, but certainly there are far more people with decent phones out, and people do spend a lot more time staring down at them while they're walking. And I wonder if that is something that is slightly different from maybe 5 or 10 years ago, when mobile data wasn't so affordable and people perhaps weren't using them quite so constantly, and whether that's given thieves an opportunity to swipe them. And I also wonder, when Pokemon Go is a big thing and it can tell if you're walking or if you're on a bike or in a car or something. I think, wouldn't it be a great solution for phones to detect that you're walking? And if it looks like you're doing something mindless, it just shuts off and says, put your damn phone
focus on walking.
Because I think that would be an excellent idea. But there you go.
Do you know what another solution to this would easily be?
Get rid of phones.
No. Explosives.
Go on.
Basically, as soon as your phone gets more than 100 meters away from your watch,
oh, it blows
it
up.
Explodes. Yeah.
They tried that in an episode of South Park where Cartman had a trapper keeper, which I think was quite popular in the US in the early 2000s or something. And the idea was if it got stolen, massive spikes burst out of it unless it was in the owner's hands. Didn't work. It was still stolen, but the thief had his hands injured.
And let's be honest, we're going to really reduce the ability of people to be allowed to take phones on planes if we fill them with explosives, aren't we? So that's probably not going to work.
It'd be a mare. Charlotte in live chat says,
they're already funny enough about shampoo, mate. I mean, let alone explosives, actual explosives.
Why do you need shampoo on a plane?
Because you might not want to take hold luggage, because if you're going to Europe, it's expensive, and if you're going for a couple of nights, just take a handbag and some little shampoos and stuff like that, you know. But they have to be under a certain size, don't they?
I just wonder what the hell you needed shampoo for on a plane.
Well, I don't know, some very fancy planes have showers on. I mean, also they come with shampoo, but you know, that's beside the point. I have allergies.
Well, Charlotte says, I bought a phone case with a wrist chain to hopefully make it harder to snatch. I worry about phone snatching a lot. I think that's very good.
It's still not a solution, though, is it? Because it's still a traumatic experience to have someone come and yank your chain.
I assume you're not being euphemistic, but yes.
No. But I mean, yanking your chain is like winding you up, isn't it?
Oh, I see. I thought you meant
meaning of that.
It wasn't
anything else.
Oh. Not right. I see. Okay. Good. Mike says, "How have the Met not asked knife makers to make knives which don't kill people yet?"
Yeah, I mean, well, they actually have, but I mean, obviously, there are certain knives that are better at, you know, killing people than others, and some knives are very difficult to get hold of as a result.
Yeah. Nick says,
and you're not allowed to carry a knife around.
Nick says, when I'm walking and navigating with the phone, I make a point of holding it firmly and close to me and only looking when I need to. Yeah, I think that's good. And also do it on the far side of the pavement so you're not next to the road, which is good not only for safety reasons, but it is also much harder to for a thief to reach you. Unless that thief is Mr. Tickle, in which case, you've got a very different set of problems.
But you can't just go on, you know, an international podcast and accuse Mr. Tickle of being a criminal. That is an actionable comment. We need to consult a lawyer immediately.
Well, let's just make a point here. I think Mr. Tickle is a daylight Well, I think he's touching people.
Tickler.
Yeah.
Well, he is. I mean, that's very much his raison d'etre.
Without permission, I think he's a pest. He's a long-armed pest. And he should be stopped. Yeah. He should be stopped. On that topic of Mr. Tickle, actually, I remember now I was on a train and I put my iPad on the seat to put my coat on. And when I turned back, the iPad had been half-inched. It had been stolen from under my buttocks. And I, within 30 minutes, had reported that crime to the police, got a crime number. And when they called back to give me an update about 2 weeks later, they said, really sorry, we checked with the phone company at the train for CCTV footage, because I told them the exact train that I was on. And they said that the footage had been deleted because it wasn't kept long enough. And I pointed out, what is the point in having CCTV if it takes you longer to get to look at it than it can physically be stored for? And they said they're working on it. And it's I may have said, what if it was a victim of sexual assault? And they may have said that if it was, they would have got to look at it more quickly, which is fair. But I still think that there's a fundamental flaw in the system that if you report a crime minutes after it takes place and it wasn't soon enough, then policing isn't prioritizing things. And I don't think that this story we've talked about today is going to improve that. So I think stop procrastinating, get back to work, come up with something more useful to do with your time, and stop wasting ours.
Nate, in 2014, I reviewed a product called EETV. And
well
it had
then.
A TV. Thanks very much. And it had a TV tuner built in. In fact, it had six TV tuners built in. And the presumed goal was ensuring that you could, record multiple things at once and watch something else. And I've put a link in the thing for that. You can put it in the show notes if you feel so inclined, as a review that I wrote back then. Now, the product wasn't a massive success, as far as I know. It vanished, and although it was supported until the 31st of March 2021, they then disabled all of the existing machines, creating what I describe as a big old pile of e-waste, which is a shame. Now, they're back with a product that's named the same thing, that's going to make searching for the new one really challenging, but it's Apple TV.
Oh, yeah.
Basically. So what they're going to do is they're going to have a slightly customized version of Apple TV with a customized remote bearing the EE logo. And I didn't even know that was possible, to be honest. I didn't think Apple was really in the game of providing sort of hardware for other people, but who knows? Anyway, like most services, like Sky Stream or Sky Glass, for example, the content's delivered over the internet, and you'll have live TV from main broadcasters like the BBC and Channel 4. That's an interesting play in itself, and there are 70 channels available, the website tells me. And that comes with the usual selection of on-demand content, including premium services from Sky, like movies and sport. Now, it seems a bit challenging to get pricing information at the moment. That aforementioned older product is what you seem to get when you have a look around for it. EE's website's broken. The link saying, find out more, don't go anywhere. And the Pocket Lint story we're basing this on doesn't have any pricing either. So perhaps a better question is, what does this have that Sky Stream, for example, doesn't? Better hardware, certainly, and possibly more flexibility, depending on how the Apple TV operates and how EE may or may not have locked it down. But you won't be able to buy it either without an EE subscription to, I believe, both broadband and TV, which seems like a weirdly limiting factor. Perhaps that's partly about ensuring the service works correctly at all times, something that's easier when you own the whole network, I guess. So my question to you is, Nate, is there any point to this?
Well, I'm actually really interested in this for so many reasons. We've got to mention that this is, as you say, something rather unusual for Apple to have done, which is to allow a partial branding and alteration to not a core product of it, but certainly one of the main ones that it promotes alongside the watch and Macs and phones and everything. I haven't seen Apple do this for an extremely long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even think what the last one even was. Because the phones, you used to get this on phones. They would have the network's logo on the back or on the front or something. And
that's
Apple,
never been an iPhone thing, has it?
Never. Never. I just can't believe that that's something that they've done. I mean, fair play. I mean,
maybe they built too many Apple TVs and need to get rid of some of them. But I mean, having said that, they haven't that product hasn't had a proper update for some time, has it? Like, it's got a new remote, and I don't know, did they up the processor speed or anything, or change the processor? But there basically been a number of versions of the existing one. That, you know, like, there's a 4K one, there's the new one that has a better remote. But who knows? You know, maybe they're just able to produce them so cheaply that, you know, this makes sense in a way that it wouldn't for other products, perhaps.
And so I went back to the source of this because I found EE's press release. And so the way that EE described it was as a UK first, an EE TV app launching on Apple TV 4K with a bespoke TV guide, as well as an EE branded
remote. I did that last time.
Remote, yeah. So I think the box itself is the same, but it comes preloaded with something, but you do get a different remote with it.
It doesn't look like an Apple remote, right? It looks like a...
It's got way more buttons on it, for one thing. Which you might like, but...
Again, I mean, maybe Apple doesn't actually have any say in it. Maybe EE's just bought a bunch as a retailer, because it is one of the biggest retailers in the country for tech, apparently. I'd stumbled across that while I was looking around. And so I wonder if maybe they're just putting a new remote in the box and sending it out as their own product, or reboxing it even. I mean, does Apple have any say in that, if you want to do it? I mean,
they rebadged it, you fool. I bet Apple does have
I bet they do. I bet there's something in the contract. I mean, there'll be something about everything, right? Well, I mean, let's assume that they've got permission to do it, because it seems unreasonable.
Let me tell you right now, they have permission to do this.
Yeah.
They, without question, have permission to do this. But it's just really interesting that it's something that Apple was keen to do, and with EE. I mean, Apple and EE have done a lot before now together. They've done, you know, the first Apple Watch with 4G was an EE exclusive launch, because they were the first to do the like the eSIM stuff that was required, and a few other things. So there is precedent for that, but to do this with the Apple TV in any form, even if they're not doing a completely bespoke box, to have some kind of custom software is pretty interesting. Well, and that has happened in other countries on other platforms, you know, on phones. You know, there's certain iOS configurations that you get in different territories.
Yeah. Well, we've been through this before, haven't we? There's a surprising number of different iPhones in the world. Like, you know, you might think that the Apple lineup is confusing, but that's nothing when you look at the actual number of different devices that are produced.
Yeah.
Can I sort of posture something here as an idea? Because,
please.
So if you were going to go about doing this, why wouldn't you go to a company like Plex, say, and do a deal with them and say, look, you've already got this infrastructure. You know, you've got not a great, admittedly, but there is a streaming platform there that has an amount of free content on it that's ad supported. You have some software that already allows you to do, you know, TV tuning, all that kind of stuff that could just as easily be delivered over the internet, because that's already possible, right? I could stream from your Plex if you had one, because you don't use Plex, do you? But you know what I mean? Like, it's definitely possible to do it. And with, you know, working with a company like Plex, you could probably build something that was actually really good. And it wouldn't necessarily be hardware dependent. Like, it could be something that you offer as a download to customers on, you know, every platform out there, perhaps. So I don't know, it just seems to me like, I'm sure that people will like this because Apple TV is a desirable product. So therefore, if it's unlocked and you can use it as you would a normal Apple TV, and the pricing is realistic, and you get, you know, a bunch of Freeview channels, actually it'll probably walk off the shelves quite enthusiastically. But I guess, you know, what is the point of this really, in terms of like changing the landscape? It doesn't really do very much at all. And Sky Stream is a much simpler piece of hardware, obviously, therefore it's much cheaper. It's 40 quid you to buy it, and in fact they won't let you buy it now, it comes with a subscription. So, you know, and then you have access to all of Sky's stuff, plus, you know, a bunch of extra streaming apps, and, you know, so it doesn't, to me, unless people desperately don't want to do, you know, use Sky or whatever Virgin's product is, because they have one too, it all it does is it sort of offers EE customers something, but like, it doesn't really change anything. I don't think so.
Well, I think that it helps that you can, you know, co-market some of this, and it is pretty appealing. If you said to somebody, oh, come and have EETV, you know, you get the best of Plex in your home, they'd be like, what? Whereas if you tell them, oh, it's Apple, they're like, oh, interesting. Great.
Yeah, and I also think
we wouldn't be talking about this if it was Plex.
No, true. Well, we might, because I'm interested. But Nick in the chat has posted a very interesting article that, again, I will burden you with putting in the show notes. It seems like this is very much a move over from the BT TV product. So
yeah.
A lot of BT customers, like, for example, my dad wants BT Sport, so got a package deal where he gets a phone line, broadband, and a TV box and gets access to BT Sport. BT Sport's gone away. It's now TNT Sport. So I guess this is basically that, but changed into an Apple TV.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a rebranding. Obviously, we could spend a lot of time talking about this, but I think we've covered the basics. We'll include all the links to everything. If you want to read more, as Ian says, we don't know when this is going to go out. They're going to stop promoting it. In fact, they started promoting it on Friday. We still don't know exactly how much this is going to cost or when it's going to be out. You can assume that we'll keep our eyes on it and let you know if anyone's interested. But it's worth having a look at, because it's a step by a network to go more towards where the old cable networks were when they wanted to start adding mobile phone contracts and become less of a dumb pipe for your data and be the provider of your hardware and your entertainment as well, which... frankly makes a lot of sense, and EE becomes kind of a wireless cable company as we used to have in the 90s and 2000s.
Yes.
Would you agree?
I certainly would. And I mean, you know, we're certainly getting to the point where the internet makes everything possible, right? So no longer is there the need for a complicated technical infrastructure. As long as you can deliver broadband at, let's say, 50 megabits per second, you can pretty much squeeze any amount of TV over that. So it's interesting. In fact, I mean, I should probably save this for my extra message, but the broadband provider I'm on apparently does have a streaming TV service that's delivered over that fiber optic cable. It runs on a different wavelength, but they don't advertise it anywhere, and it wasn't offered to me at all. I wouldn't buy it anyway. But, you know, it's interesting that everything's become much easier from delivering TV content.
I've noticed that EE's got some SIM-only deals here. Unlimited data, 5G, no capped speed, so unlimited.
Yep.
Gift data to the family, unlimited minutes, unlimited calls.
Yes.
Inclusive extras, including like global roaming.
Apple Music.
Apple Music included. £12.60 a month.
For how long? 6 months or something, and then a
24
month
plan.
Yeah, but first 6 months being the offer price, and then.
Well, it says half price for 6 months.
Yeah.
So that would be 25 quid a month.
That's interesting, because when I looked earlier, and I did look yesterday, I was still only seeing the one that's like 16 quid and then 32 quid. So have they got a special deal on or something? I should sign up if that's the case, but I
don't
can't.
Know.
Well, I can. Ask a pack before your contract's ended? I guess you can. You just keep paying for the contract until it expires, I'm guessing.
Correct.
Right. So maybe I'll do that then.
Let us know, people, if you have thoughts on this. Hello@uktechshow.com. Can confirm the email is working. In fact, it never stopped working, but someone asked, the website's gone. Does that mean the email doesn't work? No. Hence the email coming through.
Is the website coming back?
The website is back.
In fact, great.
I migrated it the other day. I found a bit of inside.
Did you do it to that company that sponsors a lot of podcasts, but not this one, so therefore shouldn't get a name check?
No, I ditched that company. And and it turns out Acast, which hosts our free version.
Yes.
They actually updated their website show pages. So you can have essentially... a website for your podcast.
Oh, that's good.
That includes all your episodes and links, but they also allow you to promote things like Patreon and Twitter.
Oh,
and
really?
Different things. So if you go to uktechshow.com, it will redirect you now to our Acast show page, which gives you all the episodes and all the links and everything. And that's basically all that the Squarespace website used to do, except this one doesn't cost me £170 a year.
Was my overly loud typing apparent there? Could you hear it?
It was. I could hear it.
Excellent. That was done for theatrical reasons. God, I'm having trouble speaking today. Yes, that looks great. That's everything you need in a podcast website, really.
It is. The about page needs a bit of work, and it needs to say something about who we are. But it's perfectly functional, and it doesn't tie you into only listening via Acast. It does allow
you to get
the full version.
Snappy.
Yeah. It is snappy. Have a look at that. I would say it took me ages, but it didn't. It took me about 10 minutes. I'd just like to thank our patrons. We got people listening live today. People like Captain Kremen, Charlotte, Luna, Mike, Nick. You know, really high quality individuals.
Yes, the best of the best.
Are supporting us and listening live. One of the many perks you get from being a patron. You can find out all the others and see if one works for your budget and needs. Patreon.com/UK Tech. If you're one of those people, then you are going to hear the final 33 1/3% of this week's show, as you do every week, where we're going to talk about something weird happening with SSDs and hard drives. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Ian, do you have anything you'd wish to add?
I'd say we crash out like they do in TV sometimes, where we just say, thanks for watching. Bye-bye.
Oh, all right. Well, thanks for listening, Ian, because this is an aural medium.
Yes, it is.
But thanks. Do check out the show notes, uktechshow.com. Got a new little website there, sort of, that's worth having a look at. And we'll see you for extra message and another text message in a week's time. Toodaloo!